Hello again, everyone, and welcome. This is Julie Knudsen with the podcast Training the Pointing Labrador, and this is podcast number 72. So welcome. Just a few days late, but again, things are very hectic right now, so appreciate your patience. This one is going to be on some questions and then a little bit more input on the training, your 4X training plan, although I tell you, I think I've covered quite a bit of that, and I haven't had too many questions on that. But I want to get right to some of the listener questions because that's been interesting to see what people have. So I'm going to go with one that I promised to get to soon, and I will do that. So I'll get on that one. Dear Mrs. Knudsen, I like that. I always thought that was my mother-in-law, but I guess it's me. I've been listening to your podcast and like your calm attitude towards training and wanted to ask for some advice. I've had a couple of pro trainers look at and this is not a retriever. Okay. So this is a little outside and I have no expertise, training years and years on anything, but a variety of the retriever breeds. So that's where I pretend to, know a little bit. So this is outside of that. This is in the pointer realm, but I'm going to take on this question because I think a lot of retriever people have this exact same thing. And so it's kind of an important deal, and I really wanted to put it out there. And I hope that it is helpful in the pointing breeds, but I know it's helpful for dogs in general. Okay, but yeah, a problem he's experiencing with his GSP female rising 4 years. So I guess 4 years old. I've had a couple of pro trainers here look at her, and both said, just keep going, and she'll grow out of it with time. But 2 years later, the issues are still here. Okay, I don't know of a lot of problems dogs grow out of. Usually, once they kind of establish a bit of a habit, it becomes a habit. And so they don't necessarily grow out of barking or jumping or not doing something that you want them to do. That's not really a dog trait. And it's not a big human trait either. You know, if you just throw your socks on the floor all the time, I don't think you're necessarily going to grow out of it unless there's some compelling reason. Like you're living with somebody now and you don't want them to think you're a slob. So then you quit throwing your socks on the floor. Outside that, not a lot of reason to. It's a little bit similar with dogs. But anyway, the issue's still here 2 years later. The problem I have is regarding retrieve. I've done a kind of force fetch to get her to hold on command, and that's fine. And just so you know, the hold is not the force fetch. It's a hold. So teaching hold is the first step and always a good thing. I can walk her and hand her an object, and she'll happily take it and walk alongside me with no problems. I can sit her up, put a bumper in front of her, walk back, and command she pick it up, bring it in. Again, no issues. Okay, so that's not a force fetch. That is a dog that's having a nice time doing a dance routine with you. And it involves some stuff that you like, you know, like picking up stuff. The problem arises, back to the question, when she is sent to fetch, as she gets pumped up and mouths the object on return. Okay, very normal. Tons and tons of dogs do that. I guess the pro trainers thinks it's a puppy play thing, and that's why they said to try and drive through the problem. I realize pointers like mine aren't your specialist area, but if you could find the time to give my issue some thought and give me something to try, I'd really appreciate it, as I don't want to write the dog off as a reject, but I'm at the end of my tether. All right. So the problem, I take it, is it isn't that the dog retrieves well, the dog works with you, and the dog is just having a lot of fun with with the bumper. And so that's not just a pointer deal. I can tell you, you know, I get that one. I've had that question a ton. So let's skip the pro trainer advice for a moment, and let's just kind of go into the world of the dog. So this dog is 4 years old. Right? That's a mature dog. That's when they're usually really in their prime. And so that's an adult dog. I don't quite get waiting for anything here. So the dog has clearly expressed to you what she thinks this whole game is about. It's a lot of fun. Sometimes there's some demands, like the little things you do when you set it down and call her and she picks it up and brings it to you, or she'll walk around and hold it. So all of that she enjoys, probably working with you. That's a lot of fun. And then when she gets to retrieve, which she obviously likes, okay, she comes running back happily and this thing is in her mouth and she expresses her feelings of enjoyment and relaxation by kind of playing with this thing in her mouth. She probably, you know, plays with things in her mouth in other ways too. So in her mind, that's all okay. There is no compelling reason for her to change anything. And if you get upset while she's doing that, you know, you don't know that she's not thinking you're upset because she's coming back, or upset because she's running or not running, or you have really no idea what she's thinking. She just knows you're mad, and so probably makes whatever she's doing more, grow, enhance. So what do you do about this? The first thing, again, let's understand what she's thinking and what her, where she's coming from. Because to be effective with changing any behavior in a dog, it is important that you understand the behavior that has been created in the dog and what the dog thinks of it. Because when it's been okay now for 4 years and suddenly it becomes not okay, I don't think they really get that. It makes no sense to them. You change the rules and you don't know whether they're thinking, all right, now I'm no good. He hates me. You know, I should go away, or I'm not going to retrieve because every time I do, these problems start. You have to be real careful of that. So you've taught this dog, probably not, you know, not intentionally, that this is how this works, by your patience and by letting it go and letting it go and letting it go. That makes it okay. So now what you have to do is not, you can't punish the dog for anything, because that would make no sense whatsoever. For something that's been okay for 4 years, now is not okay. Does not make sense to the dog. Instead, you've got to give the dog something else to think about and then maintain their thought on this different thing. And then through repetition, make that become the habit instead of the old thing. That's really kind of the only way that works. So all the patience that you've had for these past years, you're going to have some more of that, but we're going to change it around a little bit. So you've taught this dog to hold the bumper and walk around, and she'll just walk with you with no problems. Now, I don't know if she's mouthing it while you're doing that or whether the hold is perfect. I would suspect that it's probably not a perfect hold, but it's good enough. It's when the retrieve, when we got it hanging out like a cigar, or carrying it by the rope, or it kind of slowly falls out because she's happy and she's moving. So for one, let's don't throw any more retrieves for a few weeks, unless it's important, you know, that she do that to maintain her desire in that. If not, just kind of stop that and go back, and let's get it very simple and get into the dog's head. So you have, I assume, a command, fetch, or whatever you say when you put the bumper in her mouth. Put it in there, and then hold means, you know, don't drop it. That's what it means. So don't nag with any of those commands. You should say fetch once, right? And you can bump the bottom of her chin or whatever you've done to teach the dog that she has to hold. And then do your obedience. Now, this is the key part of this. So when she's doing the obedience with you, here's your goal, is that this bumper is resting in this dog's mouth and she's not thinking about it. That's the goal. It's not what you have, but that's the goal. So the bumper's in the mouth, the jaws relax, and the dog is thinking about what it is you're asking and what it is she's doing. And the bumper basically becomes just part of her. That's the goal. The way that you work on that, and it's going to be individual dependent, right? It's going to be dependent on the dog. But what you do is you give her something else to think about while that's happening. And I don't know what your level of obedience is, and I don't know what you've done. So I'm going to use the stuff that I do as an example. I'm not saying do what I do. I'm just saying I'm going to explain the concept so you get what I'm saying. So when I have dogs that do that, you know, their behavior with the bumper is not what I need it to be. I do the same thing. Okay, I need to give you something else to think about. So the bumper, you just relax and hold on to it and your mind is on something else. And I do that with indirect pressure on obedience commands. That's what I do. And heavily, primarily on sit. And when I can, once I've done sit and they're very comfortable with that, then I can do a little bit on heel and hear with the leash. But what that is, so I'm walking along with obedience. Now I use a healing stick or a plastic wiffle bat, kind of depending on the dog. It's shouldered, the dog is on, for sake of example, here my left side. It's shouldered on my left shoulder. So it is not visible. It is not a weapon I'm wielding and threatening the dog with. It's just up there. And so when the dog, we're walking along, I say heel, and then I say sit. And the minute, the instant that I say sit, the dog hears it and then feels that enforcement on the bottom while holding the bumper. Now, if they spit the bumper out right there, I don't have a very good hold. So I need to make sure that I do have a good hold. So it's unpleasantly put back in a way, you know, what I do is I pinch the lips over the top teeth. So it's very uncomfortable. I'll say hold, pinch that, put it in there, thump the bottom of the chin, and then continue. In other words, don't drop this dog. You're not going to want to have what happens happen. And it's nothing brutal. It's nothing terrible. It's just uncomfortable. It's like, don't do that. So that there's a driving force for them not to spit things out, which, you know, you should have already. But so back to what we're doing, the indirect pressure. So I'll put pressure, pop the bottom, sit, and do, again, I use good judgment, right? You have to, you're not going to pop them on the bottom every time that you say sit. Otherwise, this is just a dog popping activity. But what you want to do, it's all dependent on what she's thinking. So you pop her on the bottom or whatever you have. Maybe you don't sit. Maybe you've got a whoa or you've got something, right? Whatever the stop thing is, pressure to stop so that the mind is drawn onto the stopping. In my case, the sitting. It's drawn onto the sitting, not on the bumper. And then we'll heel again, and I'll be kind of demanding on that depending on the dog. I might heel and give a little jerk or something on there, a very quick thing, a little enforcement on heel. So the mind, I move the dog's mind over onto doing the obedience stuff. And so they're thinking more about, wow, I got it. When she says sit, I'm going to have to sit down. I want that kind of thing. When she starts moving or calls me to her, I need to move. I want the mind on that and not on the bumper at all. And it doesn't happen in one session. It doesn't happen in 60 seconds. It happens by doing this repetitively every day, not in terms of a recipe. All right, I'll do 4 pops on the bottom with sit, or whatever you use, right? And I'll do 3 jerks on the leash every day. Until that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you've got to be in that dog's head. And so, and again, I'm going to use my heel and sit. Example. So I go, I've got this dog, right? I've got the bumper in their mouth. They're holding. And the dog, I can see their kind of mind is on something else and their jaw's kind of opening up. I'm going to come in with a enforced sit. Boom. Sit. Sit. Thump. Now I'm going to see what that dog does. Again, does the dog spit it out? In which case, I do not have a hold there very well. Does the dog hold on to it and be surprised? What does the dog do? Maybe, ideally, what I would like is the dog sits down and goes, ooh, I sat. And they're just holding on to the bumper. Right, then we're going to go again. If the dog starts to relax and get funny, then I'm going to give it something else to think about. Show that I take the mind off the bumper mouthing stuff and onto what I'm asking it to do. So as I've said a zillion times in these things, you can't do negatives with these dogs. You can't tell them not to do something. When they're mouthing a bumper and people go, hold, hold, hold. I know what you think you're telling them to do, but what you're really going is stop that, stop that, stop that. And they don't have a stop that. You'll notice it hasn't worked. But if you give them something actively to do, like sit down or move with me or come toward me, then their mind is on taking that action and off whatever else it was on. So you solve a lot of behavior problems with this indirect pressure on that. So if you work for a while, starting with, again, with a retriever, you would use sit until I could really put a lot of sit pressure on the dog and it did not affect the hold and the carry of the bumper. Now I'm getting somewhere. So now I'll have the dog in front of me at the end of my 6-foot leash. Right? Distance is not the goal. They're on my 6-foot leash and I'm going to call them to me with whatever, you know, with here. And I'm going to enforce that pretty steep. Right? I'm going to enforce that with a pretty good jerk. They better not drop that bumper because me putting it back is going to be very unpleasant. So it's best, but you use just good judgment. You know, you don't overwhelm them. Start with a little bit lower pressure, and as they understand the game, now you can raise the enforcement pressure a little bit more. And the dog is going to understand what it is that you're trying to do. And now, once they understand what the game is, now you can start, you know, doing some unexpected stuff, putting in a high level of pressure on something when they're not expecting, here with a big jerk, or whatever their return to you is when they come back, put pressure on that. And so their mind is so actively on that, that the bumper becomes kind of a non-thought. So that's the way to go after this stuff in a way that's fair to the dog, because you haven't made them behave like this before. It kind of trims up your obedience nicely too at the same time. But the key is to get the dog to think about something else instead of the hold of that bumper. So once you have that here where you can put here pressure on the dog, not with electricity, right? Not with electricity, mechanical here, mechanical sit pressure, and they hold on to that bumper. Then when you just do a little short retrieve, okay, at the end of your leash or have a 10-foot leash, and then you bring that, you do that here thing right back, pick up that the end of that rope or that leash and pull them back to you with a little bit of pressure. So again, they're thinking about the obedience thing instead of messing around with their mouth. So if you don't just full out force fetch the dog, and even if you do that, people still have this problem. And so I'm not going to say that a full out force fetch is going to do the job for you, because you could do that and the dog will still mess around with it coming back, because that's been what you guys have done. So you're going to have to use patience and indirect pressure on something else, change the dog's thinking, create a new habit. And when you do that, then you can, it's a whole lot easier to just redirect the thinking and get the dog to do what you want. I could see this, gosh, on a 4-year-old dog, I can see it taking this summer. I can see it taking a couple months for just to establish a new habit. And you have to watch as soon as it starts, you know, when it looks good, you know, you throw the bumper a few times, the dog comes straight back and gives it to you and does all that. And you're going, I got this. You really don't got this. It just shows that you have begun to establish a new habit. And like anything else, you have to maintain that habit and develop that habit and work more on that habit until it really, really, really is a habit and the old thing is gone. And it takes a while for one thing to fully replace the other. And it's going to take maybe sometimes a little more firmness than you may like, a little more insistence than you may like. But that's the only way that you change dog thinking. I didn't say any kind of toughness. I didn't say electricity. But just changing the thinking by addressing what the dog is telling you all the time. And when their mind is not on something, use some indirect pressure to get the mind back on you and off messing around with the bumper. All right? So I hope that makes sense. Try it out. And for all of you guys with retrievers, they go, oh, this has a cigar hold and they're doing this and that. It's almost always going to be because they're just relaxed and having a good time. And this is a fun thing. And probably in the house, they have toys, right? And they can mess around with them. So what's the difference? And you have to, one, have their work things be work. This is your job. This is not something where we mess around. And if they're, you know, messing around with it, you've got to give them something else to think of. And that isn't fear, and that isn't punishment, and that isn't yelling hold at them 50 times, and it isn't re-force fetching them. It's teaching them that when they're doing something with you, their mind needs to be on something else besides playing around with what's in their mouth. Okay? So that's question number one, and I hope that is kind of useful. Now on to another thing that came up, and it's come up about three or four times recently. So I thought I would go ahead and pull these incidents together and come out with a kind of an answer to a general. I don't know if people actually have a question for it, but I'm it's something that's real important to address, and that is that is work, especially young dogs. This is true for any age, but this is on young dogs. And we had someone here, actually several times, but recently, and it wasn't me. It was actually my husband who was helping somebody with their, I don't know, 8 or 9 month old puppy that's being trained at our place. And he was saying, you know, you need to do this and that. And the response was, well, I need to practice more to be good at this. And I know that, you know, I've trained dogs for people a long time, and that's usually, you know, I need to be around the dog more, and I need to practice more. And I understand why people say that, but I want to talk about that for all of you that are working with dogs or working with someone else helping you or whatever it is. I want to talk about that aspect because later on when people have problems with their dogs and they wonder, you know, what's wrong with this darn dog, it usually comes back to this very aspect. So when you have a dog that is learning things, which is, you know, really always, but particularly from puppyhood up to about 18 months to 24 months, right? They're just sponges and they're learning things all the time. And it's important when you're, whether you're doing all the training or just some of the training on the dog, to understand this, I got to practice more with my dog because I know that's what people think. People think about that. And I can remember, because what it brought me back to a running coach I had maybe 10 years ago. I had a coach for running, an Olympic guy, again. I always like the best of the best, right? And we were talking one time about how do you get real good at this and how do you do this stuff. And somebody in our group, it was at a running camp actually, said, well, we just have to practice. Practice makes perfect. And he said, and I recall exactly, no, that's not true. Perfect practice makes perfect. You know, and I was like, what? I'm not sure what that is. But I really understand that now, and I apply it very much to the dogs. If in anything, if in sports, if in running, you know, I'm going to run a whole lot. I have terrible form, but I'm going to keep running, and my form will eventually get better because I'm going to practice. And that's not really true. The more you do things not correctly, the more energy you put into doing things not correctly. And so not correctly grows. So when you're working with a dog or a sport or a skill or anything, if you're doing it incorrectly, then that is what, particularly with a dog, we're talking about dogs right now, then that is what the dog is learning, is the wrong stuff. And even though it may be a kind of hard to learn, I guess, doing things wrongly, when you're working with a dog who's learning, that's what they're going to learn. And so as you get a little bit better, the dog gets a little bit worse because they've been taught this other thing. And I'll use a basic obedience as an example. Basic obedience, you know, heel and sit. So when you have young dogs, right, and they're very excited and very thrilled about all the things going on, and so they show their exuberance the way dogs do by just being exuberant and running around and pulling and getting you everywhere. And so, oh, darn dog, it's hard to do. So when you undertake basic obedience on these guys, all right, now you have to heel and sit, and you have to be at my side. So, yes, I'm a hardened old dog trainer, but I learned this a long time ago, before I was that, is that when you are going to do this, it's kind of absolute. It's kind of like you either do it or you do not do it. You either tell the dog that they have to heel and sit and then they do, or you tell them they have to heel and sit and they don't really, and so they learn that your commands don't mean very much. So no matter if it's difficult to enforce a dog to walk with you and to sit with you, if it's difficult, I understand that. You have to do it anyway. It has to be done, I'm going to say perfectly. It really, really does. Because when you don't do it right, that's what you're teaching the dog. So that's kind of, it's a tough thing, and it's a tough thing to tell people, but it's really, you know, if you're going to come and work with your dog that's being trained well, assuming it is, right, you have to step into the shoes of the dog. But what happens is people may bring the dog over to their kind of uninformed, looser place, and the dog goes, this is awesome. I like this a lot better. I don't have to think very hard or try very hard. And then, of course, gosh, this dog, look at this dog. And so I just want to address the question, this thing about when you are learning to work with a dog and train a dog, and the dog is, let's say, whatever level, the highest level this dog is being taught, you need to step into that level, folks. And I don't know what else to say other than you need to step into that level. Just like my old coach, you know, and he gave us all these things. This is how you have good form. This is what you have to do. Don't run when your form is bad, because then your body learns bad form. And so we had and that's just, you know, a simple thing like running. And now I've got it in all the other aspects that I'm doing. Don't do it with bad form. You have to do it with good form. So as someone who takes, you know, my triathlon stuff very seriously, then I'm going to do what they say. Even if it's hard, even if sometimes I don't even understand why, I'm going to do what they say because it's that important to me. So it's the same way with dogs. If you are having your dog train and it needs to heal and sit and behave, it needs to heal and sit and behave. And if you don't know how to do it, and no one has made it clear to you, then once again, find out how to do it and then do it. Because if you don't, the only one that really suffers is the dog. So I have to get that out there. It's not like practice and don't be very good, and pretty soon you get very good, because by that time the dog has learned all kinds of bad things. So all of you people with young dogs, or all of you people that are working with trainers, I know it's difficult, but if you have a good trainer or your dog is trained well, you need to step into the same standards and the same set of shoes that that dog is in, and not your own. That's one of the keys to being a very, very good trainer. Which brings me to the next question, which I actually did get from somebody. And that was, somebody had told me that they have, 21 commands for their dog. 21. That's a lot. You know, if you think 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, out to 21, I'm not smart enough to have 21 commands for anything. So they were talking about that 21, this, and then they had hand signals. And I mean, like, the dog's sitting in front of them, and if the hand goes this way, they do that, and the dog's supposed to do that. And it was so complicated. I was very, very confused. And so they want me to train their dog, and, you know, they've done all this stuff, and obedience is really important, and they want to hunt with it. So they want to hunt with this dog. And this dog now, when I first get it, right, is just sitting there like, oh my God, will everyone shut up? It basically just ignored people as much as she possibly could. And you could see why, you know, because there was all this yammering going on and all of this little tiny tricky stuff. So when and this is important, when I took this dog out, I finally, you know, started to train the dog, and I said, the vocabulary is going down to about 3 or 4 things, and that's it. That's all we're gonna do. He'll sit here, fetch, that's pretty much it. And so I'm training the dog, and we start to go out into the field and do some more of the robust things, and this dog has no clue. Just no clue. And if you throw a bumper and it goes somewhere where there's like something sticky, oh, well, we don't, ow, it comes running back. I have to go get it. That's a problem. If I have to do the retrieve, this is not good. So what the question was, you know, well, what's wrong with getting, you know, the obedience and the control first and then getting this other stuff? And, you know, obedience and control is awesome. But never, ever, 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 if it sacrifices the robust job of retrieving and hunting, if the dog is for hunting. Whatever this dog's thing is, should be brought out in a passionate way first, so they know why they're on the planet. And once they understand that, then you use that, you leverage that into all of the control stuff that you want. And so it was, and I'll be honest, it was a female that did this particular thing with the 21 commands and all that. And if you ever, there's kind of a standing joke in this part of the country right now. There's a certain group of ladies that has a certain kind of dog. And everybody out at the hunt test, you know, and everybody's going, oh, no, it's them. Here we go. It's these kids that's going to dig forever. And their dogs don't like the flyers, you know, the shot birds that were alive. And sometimes they won't, and if they're alive, they won't go get them. And so everybody makes a lot of, and I don't think that's right, jokes about that stuff. But I think what a lot of people do not realize in this retriever world, this hunting world, is that this is a blood sport. It is a blood sport. Dogs are predators, and they will kill stuff and eat stuff. That's how they would stay alive if they needed to. But dogs that are our hunting dogs, they're out there looking for that stuff because actually they would like it. We train them to do this stuff for us, but they like, and pardon me being very graphic, right? But they like the death of a bird, right? That is thrilling and exciting. And then it hits the ground or hits the water. And then, you know, they get to go get it and they need to bring it back and it might still be alive and there might be, you know, body fluids and all these kinds of, oh, they love it, right? This is a blood sport to the animals. And to a lot of you guys that are listening to this, I'm explaining everything. You're like, why are you telling me this? I know that. You know, a lot of men, these, good Lord, they love blood sports, right? It's nothing better than shooting a goose on Christmas morning or whatever it is. But for a lot of people who do not have this blood sport thing, you know, and I'm kind of probably one of them. I'm not a big killer of stuff. I mean, I have a lot, but it doesn't. Oh yeah, I don't like the duck hunt because it's really cold at 4 o'clock in the morning. It's not worth it to me. But I do understand my dogs. I understand that for them, this is awesome. They are canine warriors in the bird field, and so. I think that just because some of us are not blood sport people, we do our dogs a great disservice if we treat them like they are also not blood sport and that they can have large vocabularies and they can understand that your left hand pointed this way means to sit this way and the right hand that way means to lie down and then this one means to get back up. Nothing wrong with that stuff. But if that's all you do and you ingrain that in an animal first and then try to take them out and, you know, something live thing drops and they're like, what was that? Ooh, that, I didn't touch it. I didn't do it. You kind of take a lot of what makes them be who they are out of this stuff. So I think that if you're going to be competitive, if you're going to go run the, if you hunt, I don't have to tell you any of this stuff. You already know it. But if you're going to go run some events and you want to do this stuff and you are just not that type of person, if you're having some troubles with your dog, that might be a part of it because the dog would like to be a predator and a blood sport trooper and they're being treated like they're, you know, at a game show, a lot of times that stuff doesn't work. And I've seen that pan out a lot. It's not just women. It's not just them. It tends to be more of them statistically because we are not the killers. You know, we're the gatherers, not the hunters mostly. But still, we can step out of that and, again, step into the shoes of the dog and understand what their nature is and proceed with a little bit more of that approach. And so I think a lot of problems that people have is also not understanding the basic character of the animal they're trying to work with. So I wanted to get the blood sport thing in because I think I've had some problems in the last few years with, you know, I want to play this game and I really like it, you know, but if there's any blood, I'm going to run away. It's like, that isn't going to work here. You know, I'm sorry. And if you're that way and then, you know, somebody shoots a bird and it's not dead and the dog will not pick it up And I've seen people get mad. I mean, get mad and leave. They're the hunt test. Hunt test. You know, when you hunt, sometimes they're not all the way dead. And their wing is flapping and things are happening. And these dogs generally love it unless they've been taught it's icky or never given the exposure to it. So, blood sport. That's what this is. You have a blood sport predator, and that certainly helps if you train them a little bit with that in mind. Doesn't mean they can't be super well behaved and under control, but that's a part of it, and it's real important. All right, half hour into this already. Let's finalize a few more things on the 4X plan. So last podcast, we talked about all of the elements that go into the upland field. I think there were five different pieces of it that you need to prepare. So from now, and now we're getting close to the first test. We're a month away from the Labor Day test, and then there's a number of those afterwards. So we are in the test season. It would be very good for all of you to be right in the middle of the preparations for all those things and in a very balanced way. So what I want to talk about today, and again, we also talked about you, right, being nervous and what you bring. And I hope that people took that to heart. And I hope that people are addressing that instead of listening, going, well, there might be something to that. I don't know. And just moving on past. Because one wrong decision at the wrong time, again, that's a big old hefty entry fee. And it's a long drive for a lot of us to get to these places. So let's, you know, it'd be nice to have it be as mistake-proof as possible. So when I'm going to throw some little advice, and I've had some podcasts on this before, whatever level you're going to run, I don't care if it's the lowest level, the certified level, the advanced level, or the master level, whichever one you do, when first, please be, make sure you're aware of all of the elements that go into this. And I have podcasts on all of this broken down. Make sure, you know, if you're going to do certified one day and this the next, make sure you're aware of all the elements that go in. So what do you have to have in the certified? And I'm not going to break them all down for you, right? They have upland field, 15 minutes. It needs to be roughly this size of field, going to be these kind of birds, with conditions permitting. Sometimes the grounds don't permit everything to be perfect, but they're going to have that. You have to deliver to within one reasonable step, you know, not the Chinese splits across. The dog has to point. I think they're going to start next year requiring multiple bird contacts to pass. Some of the rules have changed. They've added some new things since they've combined with HRC. All good stuff. So you have the upland field. There's certain things you need to wear in the upland field. Not like laws that are required, but don't go in. I've seen people go in the upland field in flip-flops and shorts. You know, there could be snakes out there. It's in some parts of the country. There could be snakes biting things out here, cactus and sagebrush. You know, dress appropriately. You don't have to be like, you know, there's a few Orvis model type people that I see a lot of time. Look great. Have the coolest clothes in the world. You can do that or not, but wear appropriate clothing for there. And make sure, you know, you have your whistles and your bottles and whatever stuff you use. You can't have any training implements. And then also know on the water, same thing. You've got to do two water retrieves. There may or may not be decoys. So it'd be good if your dog had seen wet ducks and decoys before. You may not have decoys. You might have them. You might have it splash on the edge of a pond. That's hard. You might have it splash inside some tules that, you know, so there's a number of things to prepare for. And you have to do that for every level. But what is really important, really, really important, before game day, or on game day, on this stuff. And I don't care who you are. I don't care how many of these things you've run. If you go and you see what the test is, like, oh, here's the pond where we're going to be doing this, or here's the upland field. I've watched a little bit of that. One of the best things that you can do, and those of you that have competed in sports may have already found this out, is to go back, particularly if you're nervous, and visualize every single step that you're going to take. All the way from getting out of your front of your vehicle and throwing your boots on and walking around and getting the dog and where you're going to take to air it, et cetera, et cetera. Visualize every bit of that and where you're going to sit and where you're going to have the dog. And then visualize, I'm in the holding blind. What side am I going to walk out on? What way am I going to face my dog? What pocket am I going to put my leash in if I have to do that? Where are my whistles going to be hanging? Are they going to be readily available? Or am I going to have to go, oh my God, there, where? You know, you have to make sure everything is where it needs to be. What sunglasses am I going to wear if I'm going to wear sunglasses? Where am I going to face the dog? How am I going to signal the judges? After they give me the word, am I going to send immediately? Am I going to wait half a second? Am I going to, what are my plans for that? So I don't create a dog that goes the minute I make a sound. Hey, what am I going to do when the dog, I know how my dog, he likes to set the bird down or he does this or that. What am I going to do? Run every single tiny one of those things through your mind all the way to the successful end. Handing the bird to the judge, leashing your dog back up and leaving the area. And then after you do that, do it again. Now again, I don't care who you are. There is no one that has run more tests than I have. Absolutely. No one at all has run more of these things than I have. And every time when I do this, I go and sit down and get in my head exactly what I want to do. Because I want to go up there, not for the first time, but for the fourth or fifth time. Even if I'm running a lot of dogs, it helps, you know, after a while. But I've got that first dog. And every time I go up there, I am very clear in my mind. What am I going, where am I going to stand? Where does the leash go? Which way am I going to face the dog? How am I going to do, what do I want to make sure they see? I work through all of that. Where could this go wrong? Can they go out of sight if they go too far right? Am I going to let them? What am I going to do? Do I handle? Do I trust them to come back inside again? I look at that and go over that every single time because, again, I've done this a lot. You know, I go up there fairly comfortably because I want to have already thought things through so that when stuff happens, it's not the first time. That's a really excellent thing to do. There's no downside and there's no one too good for that. So whatever level you are, spend some time thinking those things through so you don't stand there and go, oh my God, I had no idea he would do that. Or I didn't know, I had no, what was that? And they're surprised and then they, you know, and no judge wants to see you fail. But, and you don't have to if you think stuff through and go, all right, what could happen? He's never seen decoys and they have decoys out there. What am I going to do? Is there something is there anything I can do? Should I don't know, think it through and find, go get a decoy and throw something over, do something. But plan out everything that you can ahead of time and think everything that can happen through and run it through your mind, not once, not twice, preferably a great number of times. And once you do that a few times, you're going to feel a whole lot better when you go up there and maybe have a, you know, maybe one mistake you will not make and you're going to get called back to the next series. So that's a good thing to practice. I'd practice it now. Practice it if you're in a training group. Run through your mind what you're going to do before it's your turn to go up. Make sure, like I said earlier in one of my earlier questions, that you're not trying to do things right. Make sure that you are doing things right from the very beginning. Take a lot of, be very aggressive about doing the right thing the first time. All the good people you ever see, that's what they do. They didn't just happen into it. They didn't just keep having stuff not work for 2 years and then it suddenly started. They said, I got to do this right. I got to make this happen. And thought things through and then took the action. So that's kind of my theme of this week is think things through. Do the right thing the first time. Don't have to beat up dogs. Don't have to blame dogs. Let's take all the responsibility ourselves. Use our heads. And do things right every single time. Takes a little bit of effort, takes a little bit of caring, and is eminently worth it. So that's this week. I don't know if we need any more Forex stuff. If there's anything you guys want to know, let me know. Otherwise, we'll move on to some new topics. I hope everybody is staying cool in this incredible summer heat that we have. And I will be back soon.